10, 9, 8. A calm voice counts down as a clear mask is placed gently over your face. You're told to take a few deep breaths. 7, 6. You feel a slight coolness in your arm from the IV and look up at the bright, round operating light like a giant sterile sunflower. 5, 4. Your eyelids feel incredibly heavy. The counting in the room seems to get a little fuzzy. You try to listen for 3, but before you can even register the thought, you're gone. Not asleep, not dreaming, just gone. The next thing you know, you're waking up in a different room. Hours have passed, but to you it was an instant. The surgery is over. You have no memory of it, you felt no pain during it, and you didn't move a muscle. It's one of the greatest miracles of modern medicine, yet we often take it for granted. How does it actually work? Where do you go when you're put under? And how do doctors so precisely and safely turn your consciousness off and on again, like a light switch? Welcome back to How Does That Work? And in today's episode, we'll be answering that question. Before the invention of anesthesia, a visit to the operating theater was the stuff of nightmares. Forget the quiet, sterile, and calm environment we know today. A pre-anesthetic surgery was a spectacle of controlled violence, noise, and sheer terror. Patients were not gently put to sleep. They were awake, fully conscious, and aware of every single moment of the excruciating procedure. The operating rooms, often actual theaters with students and onlookers in tiered seating, would echo with the screams of the person on the table. The primary challenge for any surgeon was not just the medical procedure itself, but the unbearable pain it inflicted. With no way to block pain, the most prized skill a surgeon could possess was speed. Surgeons were celebrated not for their precision, but for their swiftness. The goal was to complete the operation as fast as humanly possible, before the patient died from the shock of the pain or bled to death. The Scottish surgeon Robert Liston was legendary for this, reportedly able to amputate a leg in under 3 minutes. In this era, the surgeon's entrance was a dramatic moment. He would stride in, instruct his assistants to hold the patient down, and say to the terrified person on the table, "Time me, gentlemen." Then it would begin, a frantic blur of sores, knives, and blood. Speed was everything, but it often led to mistakes. In his most infamous case, Liston amputated a patient's leg so quickly that he also accidentally cut off his assistant's fingers. Both the patient and the assistant later died of infection, and a spectator in the crowd was said to have died from shock, resulting in the only surgery in history with a 300% mortality rate. To cope with the agony, doctors resorted to crude and desperate measures. The most common tool was brute force. Strong men, often hospital porters, were employed to physically restrain the patient, holding them down against the table as they thrashed and screamed. Another common method was intoxication. Patients were given large amounts of alcohol, like whiskey or rum, in the hopes of rendering them drunk and less aware of the pain. This was wildly unreliable and dangerous. A more potent but equally risky option was opium or its alcoholic tincture, laudanum. These could dull the pain, but the line between a dose that was effective and a dose that was lethal was perilously thin. Too little, and the patient was still in agony. Too much, and their breathing would stop, killing them. Other, even more brutal methods were sometimes tried, like knocking the patient unconscious with a blow to the head or compressing major nerves to induce numbness. This terrifying reality placed severe limits on what medicine could achieve. Surgery was an absolute last resort, a desperate gamble that was often worse than the disease it was meant to cure. Doctors could only perform external or superficial operations. Amputating limbs, setting broken bones, removing bladder stones, or draining abscesses. Any deep exploration of the body's cavities, the abdomen, the chest, the skull, was considered impossible. The sheer trauma and shock from the pain would kill the patient long before a surgeon could complete a complex internal procedure. The invention of anesthesia didn't just eliminate pain, it fundamentally changed the art of medicine, transforming surgery from a frantic act of butchery into the slow, meticulous, and life-saving practice we know today. The breakthrough that ended centuries of surgical agony didn't come from a grand scientific theory or a dedicated research laboratory. Instead, it began in a much stranger place. At parties, In the early 1800s, traveling shows and university students discovered the bizarre, euphoric effects of inhaling nitrous oxide, nicknamed laughing gas, and the vapor of a chemical called ether. People would hold ether frolics, or laughing gas parties, where participants would inhale the substances for their giddy, intoxicating highs. It was in these chaotic settings that a crucial clue emerged. Observers noticed that people under the influence would often stumble, fall, and injure themselves, sometimes quite badly, but they would get up laughing, feeling absolutely no pain until the effects wore off. For decades, this remarkable property was seen as nothing more than a curious sideshow, a novelty with no practical purpose. The idea to connect this party trick to a medical purpose came from the world of dentistry, a profession all too familiar with the agonizing reality of pain. In 1844, a dentist named Horace Wells attended a public laughing gas demonstration. He watched as a volunteer, high on the gas, gashed his own leg open on a bench, but continued to laugh, completely unaware of his injury. A light bulb went off for Wells. The very next day, he put the idea to the ultimate test. He had a colleague pull one of his own molar teeth while he inhaled nitrous oxide. He felt nothing. Convinced he had found the solution, Wells arranged a public demonstration for the medical students at Harvard. Tragically, either because the dose was wrong or the patient was not fully under, the man cried out during the tooth extraction. The skeptical audience immediately jeered Wells off the stage, dismissing his revolutionary discovery as a complete failure and a fraud. The dream, however, was not dead. A former student and rival of Wells, another dentist named William T.G. Morton, was convinced that ether, a more potent chemical, was the answer. On October 16, 1846, he arranged his own demonstration in the same surgical amphitheater at Massachusetts General Hospital. The air was thick with tension and skepticism as Morton placed a glass inhaler to the mouth of a patient, Gilbert Abbott, who needed a tumor removed from his neck. The surgeons and students watched, fully expecting to hear the usual horrifying screams. But as the chief surgeon, Dr. John Collins Warren, made the first incision, Abbott did not flinch or make a sound. The room fell into a stunned silence as the doctor completed the procedure on a perfectly still and quiet patient. When it was over, Dr. Warren turned to the astonished crowd and made one of the most significant declarations in medical history. "Gentlemen, this is no humbug." In that moment, the world changed, and the brutal, terrifying era of conscious surgery had finally come to an end. To understand how anesthesia works, we first have to understand what it is, and more importantly, what it isn't. Anesthesia isn't just going to sleep. Sleep is a natural biological process where you can be woken up by a loud noise or a shake. Anesthesia is a medically induced, controlled, and reversible coma. Nobody is waking you up from this until the doctor in charge decides it's time. The goal of general anesthesia, the kind that makes you completely unconscious, is to achieve four main things: unconsciousness, so you are not aware of what is happening; amnesia, so you will have no memory of the procedure; analgesia, so you feel no pain; and akinesia, or immobility, so your body will not move in response to the surgery, allowing the surgeon to work safely. Achieving all four of those states at once involves temporarily and safely disrupting your brain's complex communications network. To get to the heart of how anesthesia works, we have to zoom in with our minds, past the brain, past the tissues, and down to the microscopic level where two nerve cells almost touch. This meeting point is called the synapse. Imagine two people trying to talk, but there's a tiny gap of air between them. They can't just shout across, they need to pass a note. Neurons do something similar. When one neuron wants to send a signal, it releases a puff of special chemical messengers, called neurotransmitters. These tiny messengers float across the synaptic gap and fit into perfectly shaped docking stations on the next neuron, called receptors. It's a lock and key system. When the right neurotransmitter key fits into the right receptor lock, it causes a change in the receiving neuron, either telling it to fire its own signal or telling it to stay quiet. Anesthetics are essentially master lockpickers and jammers for these critical communication systems. Let's first look at the brain's main braking system. The most important stay quiet or inhibitory neurotransmitter is called GABA. When the GABA key docks with its specific receptor, it opens a tiny gate, or channel, on the surface of the neuron. This channel allows negatively charged particles to flow into the cell. This flood of negative charge makes the inside of the neuron more negative, pushing it further away from the state it needs to be in to fire a signal. You can think of it as adding extra weight to a light switch, making it much harder to flip on. Many anesthetics, like propofol, are experts at this. They bind to the GABA receptor and supercharge its effect, causing that tiny gate to stay open for much longer than usual. This results in a massive, overwhelming influx of negative particles, effectively putting the neuron into a deep off state. At the same time that anesthetics are hitting the brakes, they are also cutting the gas line. The brain's main GO, or excitatory neurotransmitter, is glutamate. When glutamate binds to its receptors, it does the opposite of GABA. It opens a channel that allows positively charged particles to flow into the neuron. This influx of positive charge moves the neuron closer to firing, like giving that light switch an upward push. Certain anesthetics, most famously ketamine, work by physically blocking this channel. They act like a plug in a drain, preventing the positive particles from getting through even when glutamate is present. By jamming this accelerator pedal, these drugs ensure that the GO signals are silenced, contributing to the overall state of unconsciousness and profound pain relief. The combined effect is a near-total shutdown of coordinated brain activity. By simultaneously boosting the stop signals to an extreme degree and blocking the GO signals, anesthetics create a state where neurons simply cannot communicate with each other effectively over long distances. The complex, brain-wide electrical conversations that create our conscious awareness are broken down into small, isolated pockets of quieted nerves. And while we understand these specific locks and keys, it's worth repeating that the ultimate mystery remains. How this widespread neurological silence translates into the loss of what we call consciousness is still one of the biggest and most fascinating unanswered questions in all of science. This is the essence of general anesthesia, but there are other types as well. Regional anesthesia, like an epidural, is like going to the specific section of nerves that services one part of your body, like your legs, and telling only them to be quiet. Local anesthesia is even more targeted, like what a dentist uses to numb a single tooth, blocking the nerve signals from a very small area. The entire process is managed by a highly skilled specialist, the anesthesiologist. They are not just the person who puts you to sleep. They are the pilot of your body during its most vulnerable time. Throughout the entire surgery, they monitor your heart rate, blood pressure, oxygen levels, and every other vital sign. They constantly adjust the precise mixture of anesthetic drugs to keep you in that perfect, safe state between awareness and danger, ready to bring your consciousness back online the moment the surgeon is finished. It's a carefully conducted symphony of silence, a temporary pause button for your consciousness, made possible by our incredible understanding of the brain's delicate chemistry. Waking up from anesthesia isn't like flipping a light switch back on. It's a carefully controlled and gradual process. The journey back to consciousness begins the moment the surgeon finishes their work. At that signal, the anesthesiologist stops administering the anesthetic drugs. The fourth infusion is turned off, and the anesthetic gas flowing through the breathing mask is replaced with pure oxygen. From there, your body's own natural systems begin the cleanup process. The remaining four drugs are carried by your bloodstream to your liver to be broken down into inactive components. The inhaled anesthetic gases travel back to your lungs, and you literally breathe them out with every exhale, clearing them from your system. During many surgeries, in addition to the drugs that make you unconscious, you are also given powerful muscle relaxants to ensure your body remains perfectly still. These don't wear off fast enough on their own, so the anesthesiologist needs to actively reverse them by giving you special reversal agents. One of the most advanced of these works, like a highly specific molecular sponge. Once injected, its unique molecules travel through your body and find the paralytic drug molecules, trapping them so they can no longer affect the muscles. This quickly deactivates the paralysis, allowing your muscles, including the diaphragm which controls your breathing, to start working on their own again. As the anesthetic levels in your brain decrease, your neurons slowly begin to fire and communicate once more, This emergence from anesthesia can be a confusing and disorienting period because the different parts of your brain don't all come back online at the exact same time. The brainstem, which controls basic functions like breathing and temperature, wakes up first. This is why you might experience shivering as your body's internal thermostat reboots, or feel groggy and slow as the higher-level parts of your brain, responsible for thinking and self-awareness, are the last to reconnect. This gradual reboot is a normal and expected part of the journey back to the conscious world. Finally, you don't go directly from the operating room back to a regular hospital room. The last and most critical phase of waking up happens in a specialized recovery room, often called the PACU, or post-anesthesia care unit. It's staffed by nurses who are experts in managing patients emerging from anesthesia. Here, you are monitored closely as the last traces of the drugs wear off. These nurses check your breathing, heart rate, and blood pressure, manage any post-operative pain, and make sure you are stable and comfortable. They are the final guardians of your anesthetic journey, ensuring your transition back to full awareness is as safe and smooth as possible.